Welcome to Women Waken, a podcast that helps you heal spiritually from trauma in relationships, childhood, and early life conditioning to shift from a place of codependency into a divine feminine state of love, harmony, abundance, and joy. On Women Waken, we begin the journey to waken from the illusion of needing to prove our worth into the divine experience of knowing our worth. I'm your host, Whitney Walker. I'm a licensed mental health therapist, and I specialize in substance abuse, addiction, eating disorders, trauma, and spirituality. I'm also a fellow human being who has experienced most of the issues that I explore on this show. On today's guest episode, I have a powerhouse of a guest, the remarkable Aureen Haquist. Aureen is a lawyer defending women who have experienced sexual abuse. In her book, Fired Up, Fueling Triumph from Trauma, she shares her story of abuse by her father, the silence of her mother, the experience that she had living in a unsafe and unpredictable environment, and the repercussions that that had that rippled out into the rest of her life and forced her to realize that what she experienced needed to be heard, needed to be seen, and then needed to be processed and expressed through her to alleviate the symptoms she was having mentally, physically, and spiritually. We get into all of this together on this episode. It's incredibly powerful. It's incredibly moving. This woman is truly a force to reckon with in the work that she does, in the courage that she has to tell her story and to share with her world that healing is possible, and it is possible to reclaim our sense of safety and empowerment no matter what we've been through. So take a listen and enjoy. Hi, Aureen. Welcome to the Women Waken podcast.
Thank you for having me here today.
So wonderful to have you and to see you on this beautiful skyline. Aureen, you have this incredible backdrop.
Yeah, very lucky to live here in San Diego and be able to work here as well.
Is that downtown San Diego?
Yep, downtown San Diego.
Beautiful. Wow. That's like the image of like, I made it. I'm in my office on the 20th floor. What floor are you on?
I'm on the 20th floor.
No, that's not true.
I am. That's why I laughed when you said it. I'm like, how does she know that?
Oh my gosh. My psychic powers just clicked in. Well, it's beautiful. And Aureen, you were kind enough to send me a copy of your book. So you are a lawyer defending women who experience sexual abuse. So first and foremost, thank you for your work. Thank you for being so bold and dedicated to that mission. It's so important and it's so needed.
Yeah, it's an honor and a privilege to represent the people that I do.
Yeah, and they are so lucky to have you. And then you authored the book, Fired Up, Fueling Triumph from Trauma. I have it right here. Yeah. I have had it by my side since I received it. I absolutely love it. You are so candid and so open about your experience and your path to where you are today, which is so inspiring and also very encouraging, that because so many of us need to remember or can benefit from remembering that just because we came from a certain circumstance doesn't determine where we can go.
That is so true. So true. And I want people to live their best life for the time that we have here.
Yes. Yes. And you experience firsthand what it's like when you feel that maybe you can't ever live your best life because you're stuck in this mentality, this set. I mean, really, it's you're still stuck back in the time where the trauma occurred. You're still that little girl, that young woman who experienced, whether it's abuse or neglect, whatever it is, a lot of us are stuck in the past, and it keeps us from believing that we can move into a brighter future.
Yeah, we believe we're deserving of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So
If you don't mind, would you be open to sharing as far back as you want to go your story and what led you to move into this line of work and to write this book? And then I'd like to get into some of the more nuances about the different themes that come up in your book that are so poignant and very related to this show, Women Awaken, which is really about women being able to heal so they can more align more with who they really are and their true purpose and their gifts, and then really flourish and actually enjoy life and be this a bright beacon that they're meant to be, as you are now.
Yeah, my pleasure. So my abuse was when I was a child, all growing up, it was, you know, in the hands of my father. My father was very abusive in all the ways. He was emotionally abusive. He was verbally abusive and he was sexually abusive. And when I was going through it, I felt alone. I felt really hopeless and helpless. And I just became part of life. Like I didn't know things could be different. And my mom, who knew what was going on, never did anything to protect me. She never said anything. And instead, the message was, you know, I should be grateful that he didn't, you know, kick me out on the street and that he was providing for me. So I should just accept, you know, what was happening. And for me at that time, visualizing something different, I didn't know what it was. So I got it from TV. I watched a lot of Brady Bunch. And that just gave me a look as to what life could be like. And so that's really what I, at that time, hoped for. I just wanted to be happy. And that's what I, you know, asked for when I would go to bed and pray. And then when I got to high school, I learned that I could go to college. Nobody in my family had gone to college before. And I learned I could go to college. And if I did, I could get out of my house. And so I put all of my attention on that. I, you know, school came easy for me. And so I was able to, you know, figure out how to do college applications and got myself into college. And that was, you know, monumental to get out from an abusive home. Like it really was a big shift. And I met some really good friends. I met my husband, and just seeing people who had a different life than me was really transformative. And after college, I got to law school, went through law school. And at that time, you know, I knew I wanted to represent the people that were being abused or victimized or taken advantage of. Like that's just where my passion lied. So I went and worked at a law firm that did that. And then I started my own. And that's the work I do now. I'm a women's rights attorney. I represent women, and I've kind of taken my trauma and I use it to fuel myself to stand up for those who are being abused, because I didn't say anything when I was young. My mom didn't say anything when I was young. And now I can't not say anything. And so that passion is what's needed. And it really makes me a very effective lawyer because it just comes out naturally. I don't have to make it up. I feel it for my clients and I can advocate for them like I'm in their shoes. So that's kind of a nutshell of where I started and where I'm at.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And then to go back a bit, Aureen, some of the parts of your book that really stuck out to me, again, the whole thing is beautiful, but when you first went to college and you did get out of that environment, it wasn't the end of your battle. And I say that as if it's, we don't all know that, but I think it's an important thing to distinguish, because when the abuse ends, that's when really everything begins. And I love your book because it explains the repercussions that you felt mentally, physically, and emotionally because of the years of abuse that you had. And so if you could share a bit, because it first started out in college where you describe that, you know, you felt liberated and you started journaling and you're actually writing out and putting out like what happened to you for the first time and you were coming to terms with it. But then it started manifesting as anger. And so that's really interesting, because a lot of people, when we feel we've been hurt, we've been abused, it's so hard to sit with that. And there's still this resentment and anger, and it can be directed at other people who don't always deserve it. They don't deserve it.
Yeah. They don't deserve it.
Yeah.
But I didn't know any of that. So like, that's kind of what the work has been, is to come to this awareness. So that's correct. I got to college. I had left the abusive home. I'm liberated. I feel wonderful. And I start journaling because of, you know, one of my friends journals, and she's like, you just put in things in a journal that you don't want other people to know. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I started journaling and it just flowed. It was like all of these details of what had happened to me growing up just came out on paper. And then we went to Burning Man and I took this thing and I burned it. Cause I'm like, why am I keeping all these memories? And I burned it. And I thought I was done. Like abuse had happened. I had moved on and there was nothing left to do. And what started happening was I was constantly triggered. And at this time I didn't know I was being triggered, but if I felt like somebody was being dishonest or manipulating me in some way, I would rage at them. And sadly, the person who got the brunt of it was now my husband. And I just assumed that it was him, not me. I didn't realize it was triggers from my past of when I was being, you know, lied to and mistrusted by the people that were supposed to be the most trusting people. And I didn't say anything then. It was that anger that was coming out now against someone who didn't deserve it. And I didn't learn that until later when I got into therapy, that those are triggers and that's what's happening. It also started manifesting. So it was affecting my relationship, you know, with my husband, obviously. I would also rage at just, you know, just anybody really, if I thought you were lying or trying to manipulate me, even though you weren't. So it was affecting my relationships. After I had my daughter, and again, this is supposed to be at a high. I've started a law firm, you know, I'm married, I have a wonderful daughter, but I felt so alone at that time. At that time, I should have been at a high. And after college, I was at a high. So I knew it was possible to feel great. And I couldn't figure out what was wrong. Like, how did I not feel this immense joy with the birth of my daughter? How was I not feeling this immense joy at the law firm that I had created? How was I not, you know, just loving my husband? And that's when I started going to therapy, was just because emotionally I couldn't be there for him or her. And I knew I wanted to be better for them. And so that's what got me to therapy. At that time, my body also was having a lot of physical manifestations, same thing. I didn't know that trauma could affect your body. And so I kept going to this one doctor, and luckily she's the one who kept telling me that there's something in your past, there's something that you're not feeling that you experienced. And I was so mad at her because I was like, how are you not fixing this problem? And she's like, because it's not something you can just give a pill to. It's deeper than that. So I really started doing a lot of work. I started with journaling, but I started therapy. And therapy for me, I thought, you go to therapy, tell the therapist what's wrong, he fixes it, you move on. And I still go to therapy now because new things still come up. And those are, I think, like what I have learned is that you're never done. It's a journey because new things will always come up for you, and you have to learn how to address them and where they're coming from. And so I now call it a journey. There's no destination. And now I kind of chase the high of feeling good because I want to, you know, when things come up, I know there's a way to get out of it, but you kind of have to reuse some of the tools that you did. So I don't know if you followed all that, but.
Oh, totally. No, okay. I'm right with you. Most of it is fresh in my mind because I've just been reading your book, and I actually would like to read a passage from your book because interestingly, it connects directly with what you're saying. And it's one that I flagged and highlighted because I loved it so much.
Sure.
And you state, when you're ready to imagine a different life for yourself, know that there's a world of resources out there to help you on your way, but no one rule or guidebook to follow. It's about trial and error, finding what works for you and what doesn't. In this book, you'll get a glimpse of what worked for me to get to this point. That doesn't mean those things will work for you. The only thing that's true for all of us is that we have to want something different badly enough to take the first step towards healing. Even if you don't believe yet that healing is possible or don't even know what the first step is. Coming to this realization took me a long time, and understanding came in bits and pieces. The journey to healing didn't come in a straight line, but in fragments, and there is no end. That's part of your introduction, Aureen. And I thought that was so powerful because I think about that sometimes. You know, I think, gosh, I'm still not done with this. It still hurts. It's still, and I needed to hear that the day that I read this, but it's okay. It comes in bits and pieces and bursts and then, you know, breaks. It's not a straight line, because what happens is life happens and life can bring up surprising responses. You meet a certain person, you're challenged in a certain way, and it brings up parts of your healing that you didn't realize were still needed. And it really, it's beautiful that those things help facilitate it, but it can be jarring and alarming when that happens. But I also love that you say there is no end, because here's the other thing. This is a spiritual podcast, right? So I'm into the woo and the spiritual. And there is this idea of, okay, we're evolving. And so we, you know, we're moving on, we're releasing our pain, we're releasing our trauma, and we go on, and you'll know that you're ready when you're fixed, right? Like it's over, that thing is over. But what I've realized is there's certain things that I think I'm always going to be a little bit sad about. I don't think there's an end to it. There's certain things that I'm always going to have a little trouble with, and there's no end to it. And that's okay, because it's such a strong part of our experience in this lifetime that sometimes it takes the whole lifetime to move through it and to have those, you know, little bits and pieces that come to you. So I just thought that was so beautiful. And your writing in general is gorgeous. So I appreciate your words.
No, thank you. But yeah, I mean, it's so true, and it can be frustrating, right? It's like for her, especially for us that have gone to school, have careers and did the things we've wanted. We do the things and then we get what we set out to do. And so for me, it's like, that's how it was with healing. It's like, wait, I did all the work. I went to therapy. I did the journaling, you know, I did, you know, why am I still having trouble? And that's exactly true. Something else comes up. My daughter now is going to turn 12. And at that age, you know, I was being molested by my dad. And so for me, it's, I guess what you're talking about, feeling hurt. It's like, I'm still hurt by the childhood I didn't have. And you wonder what life would be like if you didn't go through the abuse and I didn't have that experience. But then I remind myself, she is exactly that. I get to see her life, you know, that's the life of what a healthy, you know, childhood looks like, you know? So, so it's beautiful to also see that, you know, that's my me, and I'm able to create that and stop the generational trauma. So that's when I give myself a pat on the back.
Absolutely. And you deserve it. And on that note, Aureen, I have to say that I just read the portion of your book where you talk about how you're not angry at your father and that you feel like you should be, and that you were told by your therapist that you should be. And I'm a therapist, and in the kindest way, I'll say that I don't align with her thought, with that rule of thought. I'm sure she was coming from a place, she worked with you. I don't know the situation, but I really appreciated that you said that. And when you just talked about your daughter, it made me realize the fact that you're not angry at your father is what's going to break that generational thing. And we got a thumbs up.
Oh,
those things pop up randomly now on Zoom. Because when children are very intuitive, they're very sensitive and they can feel energy. And if you still carried that, and if you decided to, you know, or if you felt that anger, she might've felt it, and it's okay. I mean, wherever somebody is, but I just wanted to say that, because as I read it, I thought, I think that's amazing. What a beautiful thing to not carry that burden of anger.
Yeah.
And it also shows that it's a level of understanding. Cause in the book you also talk about, sorry, obviously I love so much of your book. Because I've had this too. You realize that in some ways you were like your father. You had that moment. You were like, oh, actually I kind of understand this. And I, you know, just in different little ways, you saw that. And when we understand that, when people act out in that way, there's something that happened to them that made them believe that it was an appropriate way to act. And we don't have to accept it in terms of necessarily saying, oh, it's okay what you did, but we can have understanding to say, I forgive you, because I'm not into scripture very much, but it's kind of that thought of like, forgive them because they know not what they do. You know, when somebody really believes that this is how you father, and this is what you have a right to do what you want with your children, you know, what must have happened to them to believe that?
Yeah, and that's the empathy I have, right? Like, my dad must have been, you know, very traumatized himself when he was growing up. Same with my mom. You know, she had an arranged marriage at 17 years old and had 10 kids because my dad wanted 10 kids, right? She never had her own power and control and was never given it and was led to believe she didn't have any. So I have a lot of empathy for them. And but I don't think forgiveness is enough for not being angry, right? It's still left consequences, you know, on you. And then you have to do something about it. So, and I have the whole chapter in my book. You didn't make the mess, but you got to clean it up. You know, like it's not your fault, but you got to do something about it. And some that part gets frustrating, I would say. It's like, God, I still got to work on this, you know, or this is coming out still. But, you know, the reason I wrote my book is letting it out is so powerful. Like, at least you no longer have that holding you back. It's allowing you to have awareness so you can start taking steps moving forward and acknowledging what happened to you, because you do want to just shove it down and move on from it. But shoving it down and not speaking out about it is not going to help you start your journey. And that's a big part of why I talk about journaling. Like, at least start there. You know, I'm not telling people to write a book, but I'm just saying stop keeping it inside and letting that shame and fear continue to build on itself. And you can't move on from it until you start, letting go of it.
Yes, definitely. And I love that you speak to the power of talk therapy and the power of speaking your truth. Because I do find that nowadays, a lot of people almost kind of brush off talk therapy. They're like, you just go and you ruminate about your problems. It's not as effective. And, you know, again, in the spiritual community, people more about getting to the deeper origins and doing like body work, energetic work. But as a therapist who has worked with individuals who have experienced childhood abuse, that's such a unnatural thing to experience that most of them kept it so deeply buried that speaking it out loud was a revolutionary transformation for them. It like set them free in a way to just speak, as you found writing it down, like just to put out into the world that this happened to me and I no longer have to keep it as my like hidden dark secret.
Yeah. And keeping it a secret was a form of survival. So it's like you did it to survive, and then it's a consequence of like the abuse, of the fear and the shame of like, I can't tell anybody because nobody will understand. And I'm all alone in this. You know, this hasn't happened to anybody else. It's only happening to me.
Yes.
And when you know that's not true, you know, I mean, just the fact, you know, 50% of women have been sexually assaulted. And I think that number is low because of underreporting. But if you think of half the women in this world have experienced some form of sexual assault, that gives you an idea of how many people there are that are experiencing the same feelings you are having and also thinking they're all alone. So again, by talking about it, we tell each other you're not alone. And I think that's how we're going to change the statistics that's out there right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And begin the healing path. We first have to speak it, I believe. And I think that that's helpful for a lot of people. And then there's the point that you brought up also, which is something that a lot of people aren't able to do, which is to own the fact that there's a quote or a statement by someone that sort of illustrates this idea, but it's kind of the notion of it's not your fault what happened to you, but it is your responsibility about what you do about it, or like how you move on from it, you know? And I mean, it basically comes down to moving out of victimhood, because that is one of the most challenging things to do, I think, is to move from a place of, why did this happen to me? And because this happened to me, how can I ever be happy? How can I ever be whole? How can I ever be expected to get over this? Because it was so awful. And yet that may feel really true, but it only holds us back. And right. I think at a certain point we have to decide, do I want to be imprisoned by what happened to me? Or do I want to do the scary thing and take ownership, even though it wasn't your fault? It was not your fault, the things right. that happened to us, but we got to work with where we're at. And that sounds simplified, and the pain can be so deep, but when people are courageous enough, it's possible.
Yeah. And I don't even think that I had the courage to do it. It was, for me, it was really focusing on somebody else besides myself. Like, I didn't think I was good enough to deserve a better life. But my husband and my daughter were. So for me, it was focusing on the why. I wanted to be better for them. And eventually it turned into wanting to be better for myself, because you saw the effects of what it could do. But I think for people who can't even take the first step, it's like, focus on why you want it. You know, you want that better relationship, you know, or a more loving relationship, or you want to get closer to your child, or whatever it might be. Focusing on something else besides yourself if you don't believe yet that you're good enough and deserving for it.
Yes. Yeah. So what would you say was what happened after that? You, now that you've kind of, you know, once you were able to address your physical symptoms, your mental symptoms, like the stuff that was keeping you stuck, and then the, you know, outbursts and anger, what happened then? Were you, do you feel like you were able to be more present with your life, with your family? Did you show up differently at work? Because you are a lawyer. You know, as you said, you defend these women, you're in court. It's a very high energy, high powered job. And do you feel like you still showed up the same way, or did anything shift for you once you moved into more of a place of knowing, you know, owning your story, owning yourself, and healing a bit from that anger?
Yeah, everything got better. Relationships at work and the way I showed up got better, because what I was mentioning before, the triggers, I didn't know I was being triggered, but once you have awareness of them, you can take control and harness it. And that's, I was talking about that, I think earlier when we started. So I would just go off. Some guy would piss me off and I would just go off on him, you know, opposing counsel or sometimes a judge, which isn't the best way to behave. You become like you're crazy or you're angry. But if you can control that anger and that passion that you feel, and that you can be made more effective when you don't come across angry. And so that's what I learned to do. So it bettered my skills as a lawyer, because I still had the passion, but I was able to control it and say it more effectively, and coming across passionate as opposed to angry, if that makes sense.
Completely. And yeah. I'd love to hear a little more about that, because, you know, I think especially as a woman, men will say, oh God, she's so hysterical. She's so worked up. She, oh God, we, and not that we have to prove anything to anybody else, but there is a difference between being so frustrated and angry that we come across in sort of a more attacking way versus being in our power. 'Cause that's always strong, powerful words said in a more direct, calm manner, like a true, like just bold way, is always more powerful than feeling like you're just kind of, you know, ranting or just enraged. How did you, because you just said you're able to do it without the anger. So did it just naturally dissipate and you just speaking stronger?
Yeah. Let me rephrase that. So I'm still angry by whatever happened. The anger is still there. I'm still pissed. But I'm not just like, kind of what you said. I'm not just ranting. My thoughts are very, I have them together. I have the awareness of the anger. I guess that's the difference. Before, I would be angry and I wouldn't even know what was happening to me. But now I can, once I start having the awareness, and the awareness came by feeling it. And this is some of the other work that I did. I did inner child work, because one of the other parts of my healing journey was going back to the place of abuse and feeling how I felt. Because back then, for survival, you didn't want to feel all those feelings. They were terrible. So you suppress them all. And so one of the things that I did was inner child work to feel the feelings of the abuse. Super painful. It allowed my body to stop fighting itself. And that was a big way of how I healed my physical symptoms that I was having, was because my body was fighting itself. I didn't want to feel those feelings. But once I did, I kind of let them dissipate that way, as opposed to fighting it. So with that, when I started acknowledging feelings and how things felt in my body, I did the same with anger. I was able to feel when I was starting to get angry, I could feel my entire like body getting hot, like really hot, like it was on fire. And then learning to take deep breaths in that moment to kind of get my mind, not from going all over the place, to get it calm, still be angry, and then make the argument that I wanted to make. as opposed to just rambling or ranting, you know, a lot of fast moving thoughts. And so that's how I've harnessed my power and how I've become even more effective in representing women that have experienced abuse.
Yes. Yes. And I love that you say that, because in my personal life, in this last year, I had a lot of challenges with my family, right? Stuff coming up from our past and things that transpired. And I recognized, just as you said, that when I would try to express myself, even though I had a case, I had something to say, but I turned into this angry little 10-year-old having a tantrum. I was accusatory. I had that feeling, that fire, your face gets red and you're just angry. And I had to step back and I had to say, I need some space, because this is something that I need to explore with you, but I am seeing that I'm too angry. There's too much anger here. There's too much that I need to look at before I can have this conversation in a level way. And it helps you see what still needs to be healed, right? The inner child work. There's still that little part of us that's not ready to we're still kind of like crossing our arms and saying, but it wasn't fair. And you shouldn't have done that. And again, it doesn't mean that that's not true. Yet again, what are we going to do about it? We can't change the past. We can't change who our parents were and what they did. And if we want to have some kind of connection with them or anyone in our life that we get that anger towards, we have to look at what needs to be resolved within me. What can I do to love that part of me enough that it's not so fired up? And I can state my case and share my feelings without, because as soon as you get riled up like that, you just lose your audience. The person you're trying to speak to is just only going to see you as very reactive, and people don't respond to reactivity well. They get defensive, right? If one person reacts, the other person reacts, which I'm sure you know as a lawyer is what keeps from effective communication. People just yelling, no one hearing each other. We have so much of that in our world right now. Yeah. And to me, that's when real change happens, is when we move to a place where we're no longer being reactive or accusatory, then we can actually effectively communicate towards resolution.
Yep. Totally agree. Yeah. And you're way more persuasive, right? In the arguments you want to make and to make your case, you become way more persuasive. So really, I think it starts with having the awareness of it. Like, whereas before I had no awareness of it. And now I'm very aware. And then same thing, if something comes up, that's like, oh, wow, that's really making me angry. I wasn't expecting that. Identifying like, where is that coming from? Because it's usually not the person is not making you angry. Something deeper than that.
Yes, absolutely. And then I'd like to read another passage that highlights your inner child work that I really appreciated. So this was when you're kind of at the height of your physical challenges related to your trauma that was manifesting physically. And you share, doing the inner child work helped me accomplish all that, to truly inhabit who I was back then. I couldn't avoid feeling what I felt when I was a kid. Except this time I had myself today to help process those feelings and provide comfort. I'm here, I told myself, and that means everything will be okay. I will not have to suffer eternally. Somehow that practice also helped soothe the feelings I had while re-experiencing them. I got to play the role of supportive parent for myself, and it helped me heal. After all, when I told my child self that things will be all right, I was beginning to know that it was true. During my first session with the cranial sacral healer, I had a profound release of energy that I felt from the tips of my fingers to the tips of my toes. I'd never felt anything like it in my entire life, and I haven't felt anything like it since. That's when my bleeding stopped. All by itself, it was done. I gasped when I read that, because you take us through your whole journey of that struggle, and I just couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, what? That did it? It was gone? Oh my gosh. And I was so excited, but also just amazed by the power of the release of the emotional.
Yeah. That had been carried for so long.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so, so beautiful for you to share that with us, because there are so many, especially women out there with these lifelong chronic conditions, because but men as well, we're all told to stuff things down, to not show what we're really feeling, to, you know, just move on, just move past it. But what I loved about your story is that idea that if you try to just push forward, because you're successful, you're intelligent, you're driven, you could have just kept pushing forward, but you were falling apart because of, like, internally, people couldn't see it. You were still showing up, you were a mom. But I just think of all the women out there who are, they look like they have it all, but they have all these conditions and everything because they're just running from that thing that they don't know how to address. Most of us don't. And you did. And your voice is so needed, Aureen, because you are the successful woman. Because to be honest, when you're out there in the spiritual world, like I am, some people don't take you seriously, right? They're like, oh, another woo person. But someone who's like, yeah, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a lawyer, I defend women, and I also know the power of healing.
Yeah. 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 And I really, that's why I wrote my book, because I want all women to experience it. And now it's just because life is so short and you should be living in the best way possible. So it's going to require some work, though. It requires some effort. And I wish there was a magic pill that we could all take and have it all go away, but it doesn't work that way.
But then that's also kind of the human experience.
Yeah, that's true.
I personally think that's why we're here, is we wanted to know it firsthand. I don't think that life on this planet is meant to be effortless. I think we go through that grit because we're learning something so deep about the experience of being human and living through this life and getting to know ourselves, because that's the only way that wisdom is gained.
That's true.
Right? You gain wisdom. If our life was just this breezy, nice ride, it'd be pretty, it'd be fun, but we wouldn't know the depths of what we're capable of.
Yeah. And we're capable of a lot. We have a lot of power. So it's just getting it back.
We do. So what do you share when you're working with clients that come in, and you know, you wrote this book, and I imagine women reach out to you. What are some offerings you share with them if they're like, I don't even know where to start? Like, do I go to my abuser? Do I tell somebody? Like, how do I work to, you know, address what happened to me? How do I stand up against my abuser?
So they've come to us. And so we have a law firm, and we have a team that helps them, right? So they don't have to go in alone, right? They're developing their team, and we're part of it. We have a survivor advocate on staff to help them with the emotional process of standing up to their abuser and going through litigation. And then we always recommend, if they don't already have one, a therapist. You know, it would be helpful for you to have that part on your team as well, as you process these feelings as to what happened to you. And I also tell them, I know it's really scary right now. I know it seems really hard. You've never done anything like this, but you're not alone. And I can promise you, you know, at the end of this, you are going to feel empowered by standing up to your abuser, and you're going to leave better off, even though it's hard for you to see that right now. But we've represented, you know, a number of women, and they all feel better at the end of it than they did when they started.
I can imagine.
Nobody stands up to their abuser and says, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. You know, that never happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, there are people, whoever finds you is very fortunate to have the chance. Do you share your story with people you work with?
I don't, because I don't, I mean, if it comes up, then I do, but not initially. I mean, cause I'm, you know, there to hear their story. And so I want them to share what happened to them. But that was another big part of, you know, wanting to write my book, because, you know, my clients have to share their story. They go public with it, and they have to be cross-examined about it. And I think they're so brave for doing that. And I wanted to let them know that I understand what they're going through. And so I can share mine too. They don't have to go through it alone.
Yeah. How wonderful. And then I'm curious, Aureen, because you do speak about the Me Too movement in your book, about how when that first came up, it was sort of this sense of, oh, wow, people are actually, because you had gone through your journey by then, but you had, you know, there was nothing like that movement until then, right? There wasn't people just coming out and saying, yes, this happened. Do you feel do you think it's had any impact in terms of it happening less in the workplace, in terms of people being more mindful of, oh, it's not actually appropriate to push someone to try and get what I want physically from them, or to call them out on what I like about them physically, just because I feel like saying I want to be thoughtful of this other person. Do you feel like it's made a difference?
I think it's made a huge difference. Yeah. No, maybe not a huge difference, but I think it's made a difference for sure, of women being able to speak out and knowing that they're not alone in doing it. Cause that was the scary part before the Me Too movement. All the women thought they were all alone. And they wouldn't have the support. And after the Me Too movement, they're like, well, if she did it, I can do it. Or, you know, I don't want her to do it alone, so I'm going to say something as well. And that's kind of what the movement started. And it has now just, you know, we've had a lot more laws as a result of it, a lot more awareness that this is not appropriate conduct in the workplace, because the laws always existed. It's just now women know that the laws will protect them if they stand up and they're not alone. And I think companies are taking it a lot more seriously. And because again, the awareness is there. Like, okay, yeah, this affects our workplace, this affects our employees, and we don't want that type of work environment. I'm not saying it's, you know, over, right? I mean, we still get cases every single day. Right now, a big focus for us is educating high school students, because we've had just a number of young girls who are entering the workforce who are being harassed because they don't even know, you know, what's permissible conduct and what's not. Like, oh, it's my boss, I guess that's okay. And so educating high school students who are entering the workforce for the first time, I think, is really important, because I want them to have a good, wholesome first job, and not one where they come to believe that that kind of conduct is acceptable.
Yes. Women finding their voice is so pertinent right now and so needed. You know, we've been finding it for a while now, but there's so much more. We still are not heard as often. We're not allowed as much airtime as others to speak up. And so many women still feel that it's not safe to speak. And for a lot of them, it isn't. Because unfortunately, in different corners and crooks of different industries and places, there's still a lot of harassment and oppression that happens for women that they're just sort of told to not speak up. Yeah. So the more,
even culturally, for a lot of people, right? Culturally, they're just not supposed to say anything, and it's shameful for them to have even, you know, had that kind of experience. And so you're fighting not only, you know, the societal barriers, but the cultural barriers as well.
Yeah. And then would you like to share a bit about that? Because you also talk in your book about how you are the only one in your family, because you weren't the only one that experienced abuse, but you were the only one that spoke about it and acknowledged it. And if you'd like to maybe share what that was like for you and how you were able to still stand your ground. Because I think for so many, when they get the sense that, oh, it's not safe and no one else is talking in my family, so I'm not going to. Why would I want to do that? I don't want to be ostracized. So it takes a lot of courage to do that.
Yeah. So my sister above me actually did say something, and that's how the sexual abuse stopped for me, because she said something. She didn't make it public, and nobody else in my family has made it public. And so, you know, I guess I'm in that part of my life right now. I guess I would say they don't understand. They don't understand why I needed to make it public. Why did I need to share the secret? And only thing I can tell them is that because we need to heal ourselves, keeping it a secret is only hurting ourselves. We can't be traumatized more by letting it out. We can only just continue to be hurt by keeping it in. And so how does that feel? It feels a little alone in my family at times. But I also am hoping it's for the next generation. You know, like, if my brothers and sisters can't say anything, I understand, but I think I've just like forced the issue on them. So I think they're taking the time and processing, you know, what just happened.
Yeah. And then do you have any advice to people who, cause it can be really hard when you're whether you want to call it the disruptor, the black sheep, the breaker of, you know, generational patterns, because you no longer feel, or at least, you know, I know my experience, others, that you don't necessarily feel as at home with your family, because you've kind of stepped out of that circle of sickness or secrets. You know, I specialize in addiction, and abuse isn't that different from when someone has an addiction, terrible addiction. It's everyone kind of becomes a part of it. It's, you don't speak about it. You don't actually address it. You kind of get stuck in your role, whether it's you're the enabler, or you're the savior, or you're the abuser, whatever it is. And people who want to shake their family and say, listen, we need to go to therapy. We need to address this. This is not okay. And the rest of the family says, no. They won't maybe say it this way, but everything wants to keep its homeostasis, right? No. Let's just keep how things are going. And I've had that challenge in my family where I've said, let's heal. And they didn't want to, and you can't force them to.
Right.
So how do you engage with a family that you've known the deep secrets of the illness, the sickness, the abuse? How do you still have a relationship with those people?
I think that's, I don't know. I think I'm still in that. My book came out in September. That's when the secret, you know, is let out. I'm going to see them for the first time in April because one of my sisters is getting married. And I don't know. I think for some of them, they're going to continue doing what they've always done, which is we're just going to ignore it. And we're just going to continue on like it always has been, like nothing has just happened. For some, I think they're going to just be upset and not talk to me because they don't even want to have that conversation. And I think for some, it's really going to help them. And that's really what I'd like to see. You know, I've forced the issue, but it's going to help them, you know, start letting it out and start getting on a path to healing. So I can't tell you how I'm showing up right now, just because it's still new. And that's where I'm currently at. And that's probably what I was telling you. It's like, you're never done. That's currently where I'm at on my healing journey, is how to make peace, you know, with the family whose secret I also let out. You know, I didn't mean to, I wasn't trying to tell their story, but in turn, it had an effect on them.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure whatever it is, you'll handle it with grace. But I'd like to offer just to remember that we're all right there with you when you move into that situation. Those of us who appreciate you so much and have benefited so much from you sharing your story and see your courage and your success in spite of everything that happened to you. Because I know that it is hard when you go back into almost like that den and you're surrounded by people who don't believe in what you've done and don't necessarily support you and might even challenge it or question it or, you know, mock it. I've been there, and you can kind of forget, like, wait, am I strong? Was I right to do like, and it can be hard. So I just want to offer that, like, we're there with you, being like, don't worry. We support you. We love you. We love what you did. And, you know, again, it might be a great experience. Maybe you get some thank yous. Maybe you get acknowledgments, but I just want to put that out there in case, you know, and for anyone who's going to a family function for the first time after coming out about a big change in their life or sharing certain information or coming clean, going to therapy where they're bringing up some stuff, some secrets, and you're not always received very well. But you have to remember that you have people that believe in you and believe in the risk that you took to speak your truth.
Exactly. Now, I totally agree. And I thank you for that. And I go back to how important I believe it is. So you might be upset with me, or, you know, you might not accept what I did, but I still stand strong as to why I did it and why I think it's so important. So exactly that, to help others, you know, share their truth.
And another piece that I'd love for you to share about, because I think people who have gone through abuse, who are survivors, that they also might want to hear about, is you found love very quickly, very soon in life. You know, you went to college and you met Mike. What was it, your first week?
I know. I got a year. It was in my sophomore year of college. I got to meet him. So yeah.
So I just would love for you to share, because that it can be hard to trust men, to trust people's intentions after we've experienced abuse and manipulation, all of that. It can be hard. And you do speak of that, how it was, there were times where you didn't trust and you had to learn to believe. And he sounds like an amazing guy.
I was like, he is an amazing guy.
For like a 20 or however young he was, I was like, very evolved. But like, what a brilliant gift for you. I mean, he seemed like an angel, to be honest. Like, that's the energy getting from him, is he was just there. I was so amazed by each time you'd kind of push against him and, you know that you can't be real. You can't be true. And he'd be like, I'm here and I love you. So what was that like for you, and how did you learn how to move into that? Because what a different space to actually be unconditionally loved versus this very hostile environment, very where you had to be, you know, on guard all the time to be able, I guess this is my point, is offering others, how do you learn how to let down your guard when you've learned to be like, okay, I got to protect myself because people are out to get me. They might hurt me.
Yeah. I mean, I pushed every button. So I was on guard. I pushed every one of his buttons. And I think exactly that, he always came back to, this is how you treat somebody you love. And I think that really resonated with me, or really affected me. It's like, how do you treat somebody you love? You don't abuse them. You don't yell at them. You don't mistrust them. You're not trying to fight with them every day. You're not calling them horrible names. That's what it means to love somebody. You're there for them unconditionally. So it was very foreign to me, But he just always came back no matter how much I pushed and showed me what it means to love, right? He showed me the way. And so that really helped. And that's what helped, you know, we had our daughter 10 years after we were together. He shows me, you know, how to show up in a loving way. And he's still the same way today.
What a gift. How beautiful.
And I would just say it's hard. I just, you know, it's not easy to love and trust somebody when you get out. Like that's all I can say. And I think having this person who shows you the way, I think is how I did it.
Yeah. And it's also just nice to be reminded that there are men like that out there. And that it is possible to have someone that will let you break down and let you express, and that they'll see that it's not really about them, that they're that emotionally involved that they can see, like, that you just need to be kind of held and just allowed to let this out. I think a lot of us can get used to, especially if you're used to abuse, it almost feels normal when people more so would respond to that with, like, wow, you're really messed up. And like, you're really, and then you're like, oh yeah, you're right. Like I deserve that. I deserve to be told that there's something wrong with me and I'm this and I'm that. And then the other thing, but that's not love. Even right. If it might be somewhat true that we have healing to do, when someone says those things to somebody, that's not love.
Right.
What Michael did was love, because he saw that it was just your pain. And he was like, I'm going to sit here with you. That's remarkable, but it exists.
But it exists. Yes,
it does.
It does exist.
And it's such a nice thing to remember, is because I really do think a lot of women are like, well, what am I going to do? There's, you know, I've been on Tinder way too many times. I'm just going to settle for this guy who barely pays me any mind and is critical, but he stays around. That there are angels out there. There are incredible men out there.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm so glad you found one, because I imagine he's a big part of you being able to move through the healing process and move into this place of being this lawyer who's able to defend women who really need it, and having this incredible life that you have with this view of San Diego in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just always been supportive, right? He was never trying to diminish me or take away my power. He's always been just trying to build it up. And he believed in me and saw something in me than I ever saw in myself, you know, and having somebody like that just kind of be your cheerleader. And it doesn't have to be your husband or your partner. I mean, there's friends like that you have in your life, you know, people that are not trying to bring you down, but they're constantly trying to bring you up. And that's the people you want to surround yourself with, not the ones that are trying to take you down or keep you down along with them, right? Because it is comforting. Misery loves misery, or I think that's the saying.
Yeah, misery loves company.
Yeah, misery loves company, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that's why I just loved your story, because unfortunately what you hear of a lot is women who go straight in, dive headfirst into a very unhealthy, toxic relationship, because it's that almost like that person can sense, like, oh, they're going to believe when I tell them that they're not worthy and they're not good enough and that abuse is normal. And you stay in because it feels familiar. So I love that you just whoosh right out of it and allowed you to heal and speak so powerfully, because I think you had to have that experience to be able to be so confident in it.
Yeah, I should say I had that boyfriend. So my high school, I did. Oh yes. The high school boyfriend. He was awful. Yes. He was awful. He called me all the horrible names, which I believe because I had heard them all from my dad. So it was nothing new for him to say all those things to me. He made me believe my only purpose was to have sex. Again, believed it because I didn't believe my body was mine. And so I had that. The way I was able to get out of that was going to college and meeting good friends, the two friends that I met, you know, before my husband, and having them. And it was, again, same thing. It was like, oh, people are really just like me for being me, and they don't call you names or don't think poorly of you and want to bring you up and bring you on, I guess, a fun, fun way to be. And they're not just complaining. Yeah, I don't know. It was definitely I had the bad boyfriend. I see it now. I was lucky. I got good friends who showed me a different way. And then that led to meeting Mike. And all of those people are still in my life today. So,
wow.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. Well, Aureen, thank you so much again for being you and writing this book and doing the work that you do. Are there any last messages that you'd like to leave for anybody listening who is thinking, oh, wow. Okay, maybe I could also look at what happened to me. Maybe I could go seek out counsel for speaking about what happened.
Yeah. I would say, don't wait, you know, Don't wait. Take a step today. If you're listening, time is precious. You should take advantage of it.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I highly recommend everyone reading this book because it's not even about whether or not we've experienced that sort of abuse, but it's just a very empowering book about what do we do with what's happened to us? How do we turn fuel triumph from trauma? Yep. Such a great tagline. So true. So relevant right now. And it's the phoenix rising from the ashes on the cover of your book. And I think this is the age of women really being that phoenix, because a powerful woman is an incredible force. And it's the force of change in our world right now. You know, yeah. I personally think that's how things change.
And they're scared of it. I mean, that's another big reason for what's happening, about our rights to our own body, is they're scared of it. And so we gotta band together because we are powerful. So we just have to do a little bit of work if it's left us.
Absolutely. And Aureen, if people would like to find you, how can they do so?
They can find me on my website. It's Aureen.com, Aureen.com. And if they're interested in the book, they can get a free introduction chapter of my book to learn more about that there. And if they have any reason to, want to file a lawsuit because somebody has been abusing them, they can go to our firm website at haelaw.com.
Wonderful. Thank you again so much. I'm so excited to see what you'll do from here.
Oh, I imagine thank you.
Are there any other books in the works or any other?
No, not right now. Right now I'm sticking to this and focusing on the work.
How long did it take you to write the book? I'm curious. Like from like first
2 years, I would say.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again for writing it. It was so beautiful having you on this show. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you again for having me.
Take care.
That wraps up our episode for today. Thank you so much for listening to Women Waken. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and come back for more. If you'd like to connect with the Women Waken community, you can find us on Instagram at Women Waken. And if you follow Women Waken, you can get a free tarot card reading if you just send a DM. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and don't forget to let your unique light shine into this world.